Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, here quarantined in my house, like so many of you are. And I hope that if you're listening, you're doing well and being safe. And for anyone who is affected by this, both in loss of health or loss of jobs, income, livelihood, or just isolation, I'm really thinking of you. It's a tough time for everybody in the country. And if it's not a tough time for you, good for you. I think that we're all struggling with it in our own ways. But there's also an interesting struggle right now, a challenge, if you will, for running for office. It's still important. This is 2020. There is an election in every state, every district, and every district needs to be contested, and every state needs to be contested. And there's an election every year, but this year is very important for a variety of reasons. And one of the states where the election may be most important, as we've seen in news in the past few weeks, during the quarantine, during the epidemic, is Wisconsin. You hear about all the time with the legislature, sometimes making decisions that are head-scratching no matter what state you live in. And today, I'm proud to have a guest today, Jacob Malinowski. He is running for the legislature in Wisconsin. He's going to talk about why he's running, the kind of campaign he's running, and I'm sure give a little bit about how running a campaign at this time poses both unique challenges and maybe some opportunities as well. So, Jacob, thank you for calling in to talk on my podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tony. I think what you're doing is super cool, highlighting especially local races that don't always get a lot of attention because right now elections are important up and down the ballot. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And of course, you're not here in person because we're not allowed to be in person.
Yes.
And also, I don't make any money on the podcast, so I can't afford to have anyone fly out from Wisconsin to Philadelphia. But there are 500,000 elected offices in this country, not all of them up this year, but all important in their own ways. You are running in for the assembly in Wisconsin. So tell me a little bit about what has motivated you as a young person to say, I have to step up and do this.
Sure, that's a great question. I never thought I would be running for office, especially when I was this young. I turned 22 yesterday, actually.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. And it's kind of a crazy thought. I'm the youngest Democratic challenger here in Wisconsin. There's a few key motivations. One was pretty persistent, and one was more of an instance. I think the persistent one is I hate to see local and state politics go to waste. Yeah. I've spent some time working in local politics back where I went to school, and that's where most of government gets done. Congress maybe passes one or two key bills every year, but your state and municipalities are where like all of the action happens. My state rep has been doing almost nothing to help the people of this district, and that's super disappointing because I think there's a lot of ways that like middle class and working class people can be helped by like people first policies here in the states. And the true motivating event, the thing that really got me off my butt and wanted to do this, was last November. We had three cases of young people committing suicide here in this district, two in the neighboring high school, and one where I went to school. And that person is the younger brother of a good friend of mine. And that same day, my state rep missed six votes on suicide prevention. And I think that's a complete, utter failure of leadership. And that, like, truly, Tony, got me pissed. And ever since November, I've been considering this, talking with people in my community, and we just got off to a full start in the middle of April.
And that's an issue that's important to me. I had a friend who, I believe, passed away from suicide just a few before this quarantine happened, and was talking about it on another podcast with a state representative from South Dakota. He was a transgender, and you know from your experience doing this and running on these issues that suicide is one of those things where there's often no clarity, both for the families and friends, to
really know why something happened or if that was the case, and it creates an additional hole in your heart with that questioning that comes with it when you lose someone that way.
Right, and it's not a partisan issue.
Right.
There are some things that I know are completely impossible to tackle because they're so partisan. And so normally who's ever in control gets to decide them. But our campaign priorities are expressly non-partisan, and I think something everyone can get behind. In fact, those six votes on suicide prevention passed overwhelmingly with bipartisan support of almost every vote in the legislature. And we can do things like that to improve everyone's life. I know we're not going to agree on everything. That's impossible. But there are things we can agree on. And it's simply having somebody who's passionate enough and motivated enough to actually do something about those things.
Yeah. So it's an important issue to you. And as you said, the legislature did do something. What if you were the in office instead of your opponent, what would you do about that kind of issue?
Sure. We have a policy roadmap of our top five policy priorities. And the one I think directly addresses this is to fund a mental health counselor in every school district.
Yeah.
Some of our school districts are really large and simply don't have enough counselors to tackle everything. Some of them are small, and so their counselors do double duty as mm-hmm. other things, and simply are not completely trained with how to handle stuff like this. If we had a person in every high school and every middle school and elementary school in these school districts who students knew they could go to specifically about things like this, every little bit helps. And I know some of that burden falls on the family, on other people in the community, but our students are at school for over 8 hours a day. We can put someone in that building to help. I think it goes a long way.
So obviously you can't see me, but I'm nodding along. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. The 6-year-old is in kindergarten right now, hasn't been in school since middle of March. And the school district had the reach out to everyone, all the parents, to say, if your kid needs to talk to the counselor, we're here for you. You can set up special short visits by phone. They did a survey to ask you age-appropriate questions. And, you know, as far as I know, my son is fine, but I'm not an expert. And I know this is hard. You know, he cried a bit when he learned that there was no more kindergarten. But it means so much as a parent, because parents aren't experts in mental health. People think that parents are experts in this stuff, and every parent is winging it, basically. You know, it means so much to know when the school district is thinking of it, and that's why those services are so, so critical.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And we have a chance to have that great equalizer, which is school, right? No matter who you are, no matter how much money you make, you have the chance to go to a public high school. And that means that no matter who you are, you can have access to this resource. And that's what's important to me and the people of my district, is that this is not a cost-gated, a paperwork-gated, a knowledge-gated thing. It's an individual who your child knows and who they know they can go to specifically about things like this. That's why it's important to us, and it's why it's important to put it in the school districts.
Yeah. So I have talked with a number of younger people, who have decided to run for office in one position or another. I think the youngest person I talked to was Bushra Amawala from Illinois, and who ran for and won a seat on the school board and while she was in college. So she's, you know, around your age. Why is it important for people like yourself, in terms of younger people, people in their 20s, sometimes even younger, to not wait their turn, as they might say, and take the mantle and just go for it?
Yeah, and waiting your turn is a word I've heard thrown a lot around here.
Yeah.
By both non-political people and Democrats and Republicans in these parties. Oh, you're 22. What do you know? What is your experience? And to that, I simply say, like, my generation is cognizant, aware, and prepared to tackle new challenges. We're in the middle of one right now, And that being COVID-19, as well as the climate crisis we're facing, and like that burden falls onto my generation. When politicians talk about saving the environment for your kids or your children's children, I am that person. And so I think it's important that we give agency to the people who are going to be affected by this policy years and years down the road. And even further, we have like an aging population here in the United States, and those people are using resources that currently I'm paying for, right? I pay into Social Security, right? I pay into these programs. And I think there's a lot of cool new ideas for my generation, which was completely raised online. Digital native is a word we hear a lot. And so when we wanted to help with COVID-19, we knew how to do that digitally. We know how to campaign digitally and how to provide resources digitally. And that's where our world is heading. And so it's important to have informed experts leading our states, but it's also important to make sure those experts know how to communicate and how to push these things forward come the 2020s, the 2030s. And that's why I was really excited to run for office, and why I'm excited to see so many other people in my age bracket run for office as well.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to get any argument from me on those things, especially when it comes to climate, which, you know, this to me, aside from the current pandemic, is still the most important issue on a federal or local level. You know, I talked to a state representative from Alaska, and he said, this isn't an issue that's going to happen. It's an issue that's happening here. And it's very detrimental to the Alaskan economy, potentially, and tourism and everything like that. But it seems like there is a generational divide amongst people who say, you know, all my life, winters come, summers come, that's just how it is. And then younger, politically active people who are looking at this and thinking, well, when I'm your age, what is this going to be like?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And the key thing to highlight is that this is getting worse. So it's accelerating. Mm-hmm. So even though it has been happening for the past 100 years or more, at which the research points to, this is, again, not a partisan issue, but it's getting worse because we're adding more people and adding more emissions. And the key point for our campaign on climate is to recognize that we can encourage good behavior just as much as we can discourage bad behavior. So things like making it easier to carpool to go to work. I live in the suburbs. Most people here use a car. That is something that would be almost impossible to get around because a bus infrastructure, some sort of public transportation infrastructure, would be hard to build geographically. But what we can do is encourage people to ride share, encourage people to carpool, find ways that if you want to go out for leisure, let's say downtown, you can order an Uber out here in the suburbs, finding ways to get people to buy electric vehicles, like reducing the title and registration fee on those. There are ways to encourage good behavior because people are always scared of punishments for bad behavior. And we've seen that encouraging incentives help more. And so we're trying to find creative ways to work with what we've got. And I think that's what younger people are super excited about. Not just saving the climate, but doing so in a way that recognizes that real people are impacted by it.
And I think that this terrible pandemic we're going through kind of highlights this opportunity, I guess. I hate saying it's an opportunity amongst such a terrible thing happening, but you see so many jobs that could be from home. You see so many people that could work from home sometimes and reduce the amount of cars on the road. You see so many ways that we could rethink society to be more self-sufficient and environmentally friendly. Do you see this as a moment to reflect on maybe all of these issues, healthcare, the economy, environment, and step back and say, well, now we're peeling back and see where we can solve problems in a different way.
Right. Yeah. And I also hate to think of this as some sort of political opportunity, but it is an idea opportunity.
Yeah, okay. That's a good way of putting it.
Okay. Maybe we don't all have to go out and drive to the places we want to. Maybe that can be delivered. Maybe there are cool ways to support internet infrastructure so that we get faster internet so that we can work from home. Mm-hmm. healthcare. How can we make this more accessible to more people in order to prevent something like this in the future? There's a lot of interesting ideas that are happening because they have to. And it's up to especially young people, but all of our politicians, to, after we get through this, because we will, thinking about how we can permanently change the things we're going through. We've got some stuff like that up on our website. I think one of the key things that comes to mind is essential workers. We've had different folks we've considered heroes throughout American history. And right now we're getting to a moment where the people who check out your groceries are essentially heroes, and that's awesome. And so we should figure out a way to support the people who are doing so much for us now and support them indefinitely in the future. And so I think not of this as a political opportunity, but one as an ideas, a brainstorming opportunity. We get a testing phase that we have to go through right now with how do we respond to this crisis? And afterwards, I hope we can reflect and take the good ideas and implement them permanently.
From my experience, professionally, personally, politically, I feel like the younger generation, millennials, zillennials, whatever you call anyone from whatever age group, are looking for idea opportunities in any sort of problem. You know, when I go to work, I see, and I work in nonprofit industry, people say, well, how can we redo this? Why do we have to do this the same way? And, you know, you have people in government now, like you talked about your opponent, who've been there for decades sometimes, who continue to do the same things and maybe are passing those idea opportunities behind.
Right. And I'm not here to change things that are working. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. There's really cool traditions and opportunities we have here in my community. I mentioned before, I'm not trying to get rid of cars. People in my community need them to get to where they're going. And so we're focusing on putting those people first and thinking about policy like that. But I think you're completely correct in this idea that if you've been around something for a long time, sometimes you can start to put the blinders on, or you're just not seeing the problem opportunities through no fault of your own. You're just used to something working in a way over and over again. And so I think that's why fresh, new leaders are important, because they bring a different perspective. It's not always right, and it's not always wrong. It's just different. And that's why our legislatures should look like the populations of our states. If they're too heavily weighted towards one age bracket or demographic, we're missing perspectives and we're missing ideas to listen to and ideas to implement.
Yeah, and that's something I brought up on another podcast with a couple different younger people who've run, is that most legislatures are not representative. There's only one legislature that is over 50% female in the whole country. I know it's even worse in Wisconsin than other states, from my understanding. And so, as we said earlier, people would say to you, you're 22, wait your turn. But representative government isn't necessarily supposed to be something that people get into after 20 years of work experience. It's supposed to be representative for a reason.
And I would be shocked to learn we have one state assemblyman here in Wisconsin who is in what I would call Generation Z, my generation. Mm-hmm. I don't think 1% of the state is under 25. I would be shocked to learn that was true. And so we need to be thinking about diversity of legislative bodies in a lot of different ways. We talk a lot about local issues here, right? Communities. So it's important to have legislators who represent rural and urban and suburban communities from different parts of the state who all have different priorities. That is the same with age and race, ethnicity, educational background, career backgrounds, a lot of different opportunities here to just listen. None of these people are more right than others, and your background or identity doesn't make you more correct. What it does give you is a different voice, and we've never been harmed by having different voices and different takes on issues.
So you mentioned about your website a little bit ago, and you know, I only have so much research I can do on you because, again, you're 22 and you don't have years of votes on you, right?
But your website is very dynamic compared to a lot of other websites, and not only in terms of graphics, but language. And I want to ask if this is intentional. You don't seem overly negative. You're a very positive person, both in your outlook and the color scheme and look of things. But the way you write about different issues seems very direct. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think both on the negativity point and on the direct point, that's pretty fair. And our thinking was, our current state rep has a barely functional website, mm-hmm. where he lists four values he has, most of which are not even applicable to government. And so we said, how could we give people something to vote for, or at the very least, enough information to vote against me? I don't want to be voted against because of my age or because of my political party. What I want to be, if you disagree with me, you should be voting for the other guy. I firmly believe that. And so it's my duty as a candidate and hopefully as an elected official to tell you my opinion on things and hear feedback. So yeah, I'd like to think our website is pretty complete, and we try to stay positive, just because I'd rather talk about cool ideas and things I've heard than bash the other guys.
Right. So one thing I've talked about too on this podcast is running for office. It can feel very solitary because you're the only candidate in your race. For, you know, obviously there's your opponent, but no one else you're working with can know how you're feeling. But it can also be a fun thing because you can work with other people, build coalitions, teams, get support. Are you getting support from others as you do this? Not just in terms of donations, which is obvious, but just in terms of, you know, not being alone.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I've worked on political things across the country while I was in school. And so I have people, especially young people, who are doing some impressive things to talk to. And I've actually made it a point to reach out to a lot of the younger candidates running for office here in Wisconsin. Because just like you said, this is a weird thing to do. It's even weirder when you're younger. And so I'm trying to form some sort of peer group of people who are all under 35 to talk to bounce ideas off of, to share cool strategies. I don't know if you saw, but on our social media, we do daily videos and they're automatically captioned because it's better for the social media algorithm and because we're really concerned with accessibility. I've had so many candidates reach out and say, what app are you using? Things as simple as that are helpful to see. And so I'm trying intentionally to find kin groups like that. And there's some really impressive young people across our state running for office. And might I say both Democrats and Republicans. I talked with a guy who's 20, who's running up North Wisconsin as a Republican. And I read his platform and I was nodding my head along to most of it. And I think that's what's really cool about young people running for office is it's not this party your dad or mom always voted for. It can be different. It can be dynamic and it can be locally focused.
And the way you put that, you know, I remember years ago working in the Pittsburgh area. I was out in one of the Pittsburgh suburbs, and there's a lot of old school Democrats in that area. Democrats who in other parts of the state would be Republicans. And so they don't realize that there are young Democrats who are like you and young Republicans who are also like you in terms of how they approach things. And it seems like if, especially for Democrats, because that's, you know, who I would support, you need to get with the times because one way or another, your opponents are going to as well. And you don't want to be caught flat footed.
Yeah. And that's what's been clear to us on so many things. And regardless of whether or not it's going to hurt or help our electoral chances, standing up for people who don't always look like us is an important thing to do. And so we've been getting with the times is an interesting phrasing because this was how I was raised. This like is my times. So it would be weird for me to not say that we treat everyone equally, regardless of any sort of background or identity characteristic. That's so foreign to me as a concept that, of course, we're talking about diversity and equity on our campaigns and inclusivity. And I think you're completely correct. There are people are weird politically. So it's important to me and to our campaign to run focusing on those issues and focusing on who I am and not changing that just because we think it might help get us a few extra votes.
Yeah, I think you're right that people are weirder politically than people realize. Like, I've met people who are staunch conservatives, but they also think that there should be universal health care. I've talked to people who are staunch liberals and they believe some other conservative thing. Or people are more polarized than ever, but they also, once you talk to them individually, have more unique views than I think people realize. And that's one of the fun and interesting things you get only when you're actually campaigning.
And a brief story, a neighbor on the street I grew up on called me and was very diligently questioning my policy platform. And here are the four interesting characteristics I took away from her. She was a pro-wall, pro-Medicare for all, pro-free public transportation, pro-publishing the names of people on welfare. Like, two very conservative and two very liberal positions, simply because of that's how she interacted with politics. She doesn't own a car, so she takes the bus. She needs a cancer drug to survive and can't buy the generic version. She gets a lot of her information from certain news sources and is worried about immigrants or undocumented citizens taking away trade jobs, which her husband worked in. And she worked in government, and her salary was published. And so she wants people who are on welfare to have their benefits published. That's weird. It's weird to be in that sort of margin. But those people, there are people like that all across, because politics affects us differently as people. And so that's why whenever I get the question, oh, how could a Democrat ever win in this district? I don't even accept the premise of the question. I don't think people, we might be as polarized as we've ever been, but I think people can see the trees in the forest and understand that different candidates have different policy priorities. And it's about sorting that out at the ballot box.
So one of the reasons that you and I got in touch is because I had spoken with Emily Segrist, who's run for assembly in Wisconsin. I really think of the 60 or 70 people I've spoken with on here, she might be in my top five. Just because it kind of set a light switch in my head. Like, politics is, doesn't have to be, but it is almost like a war in terms of one side wants to do this, and if you don't want them to do that, you have to get involved or they're going to do it. And especially because you so focus on healthcare, and you see some of the things happening in Wisconsin and other states. But we also talked about the fact that, you know, she didn't win her election in 2018, but the governor, the Democratic governor, did by a small margin. And had it not been for elections like hers and now like yours, with if no Democrat had run, then they would give up tons of votes up the ballot as well as down the ballot, right?
Right, exactly. And a Democrat hasn't run for this office since the opponent first got elected in 2013, and a Democrat hasn't elected this or been elected to this office as long as I've been alive. And that sort of up ballot and down ballot trickle up and trickle down effect is important. It's not something we're necessarily focusing on, but I get it. And I get that that's important both for Congress, which we have a Democrat on the ballot for, and for presidents. And I think people should run everywhere. Mm-hmm. Simply because choices are what matter in politics. And I'd hope that you at least get some sort of choice when you go to the ballot box.
Well, and that's why, like you said, people should run everywhere, because unchallenged incumbents lead to lazy incumbents, both in terms of politics and issues. You talk about young people looking at the world in a different way. If politicians aren't challenged to look at the world in a different, fresh way, then they're just not going to find a need to do it.
Right. I couldn't agree more. I think a great example of this is during the 2018 election. My opponent sort of had a libertarian opponent, but he wasn't really campaigning. He didn't raise any money. And so the incumbents went to Poland. on a state trip during the last weeks of October and early November, during an election. He wasn't even in the country, much less the state, much less the neighborhood that the people here are voting for him. That's lazy. That's not diligent. And even if you don't have an opponent, you should be getting feedback, running an actual campaign, because that's what people expect and deserve from their politicians.
And not only do the people deserve that from their elected politicians, the people that represent them, but if you are fortunate enough to win, you're going to want to work with people to share ideas. So, no one gets anything passed by themselves unless a legislature somehow becomes one person. So if you're lazy about it, then what's your use as an elected official to your other colleagues if you're not offering up your own suggestions and ideas and just going there to vote as the Republican or the Democrat?
And what's the point of being an elected official? I completely reject this idea that you can just get elected kind of based on name recognition alone. Why are you even there? If you're not going to show up to votes, if you're not going to knock on people's doors, contact them, reach out to important community leaders, like, are you just an empty suit who votes party line? What's the point? Why would anyone want to do that if they're not engaged in the community? That's been the most confusing thing to me on this campaign, is why would you want to be an elected office, especially as you get older and you've already accomplished so much in your career? Why would you want to be a politician if you aren't interested in listening to and talking with the community?
Right. So those are some reasons you have decided to run. Some of the issues you're running on, especially mental health and the environment we talked about a bit, and being there for your constituents in a way that politicians aren't always there. We know some of the challenges of your district and what you're doing to run and some of the motivations. But people are listening across Wisconsin, across the country, and the podcast is You Should Run. From your limited experience doing this, what is your encouragement to others to run for office as well, whether this year, next year, or beyond?
Yeah, I've worked for some really cool candidates. I helped elect the mayor of New Haven, who is currently dealing with a problem we did not think we would be dealing with in November. And one of the best things I learned on that campaign is that, like, good guys and gals can be our politicians. Like, people with, like, real hearts and real minds who are, like, actual honest citizens. It's really, really easy to think of politicians as, like, the stereotype, slimy, just want power, all that stuff. And then when you work for one or meet one who is a good egg, and there are lots of them across this country, that got me so engaged and so excited. And that would be my encouragement, is that when you run for office, you don't have to be a politician. We like to think of ourselves as liaisons or community ambassadors. I really, really don't. I'm still saying to this day, I don't want to be a politician. That's not interesting to me. What's interesting to me is giving the people of this community a fair voice and a good ear so that we can listen. And so my encouragement is, if you care about a place, the place you live, like, good people can run for office. They do get elected. And if you don't believe me, go talk to someone who you see online as you think they're engaged. It doesn't matter what political party, doesn't matter what rung of the ladder they are on for office. If you find someone and you like their stuff, try to reach out. And if they respond and you like them, it's a great view into what a politician can be. Not what they always are, but what they should strive to be. That's my encouragement, is that there are good eggs and you can be one if you run.
Yeah, and you can help make those eggs better, or they can encourage others. I've seen that so many times in my own life and from doing this. I really appreciate you sharing your experience and going through the challenging rigors of running for office, encouraging others. One last thing, I'm sure this will be an easy one for you. If people want to learn more about you and follow you on social media, where should they go?
Yeah, all of our stuff is Elect Jacob. So feel free to check out electjacob.com. Our Facebook is Elect Jacob WI. And our Instagram and Twitter, where I'm also very active, is at electjacobwi. And on those sites, you'll find my personal cell phone number. I respond to people in and out of district. You'll also find my email, and would totally love to talk with anybody, especially those who are on the fence, especially younger folks who want to get engaged.
Great. Thank you so much, Jacob. And I wish you the best of luck. If you're listening, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast in whatever podcast format you use, and leave some feedback. Message me on our podcast, our Twitter channel at You Should Run Pod, or follow us on Facebook as well for some live streaming videos I'm doing soon with some new formats. And if you're listening, I hope that you will be motivated by Jacob's story and by others. And maybe you will run for office this year or beyond. But thank you so much, Jacob, for your story.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate it.